Morning, welcome to our meeting. It is 9 a.m. on October 7th, 2024, and time to convene a regular meeting with the Snohomish County PD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary. Joining us shortly will be Commissioner Tony Wolf, our Vice President. We have with us today John Parlow, our CEO, Colin Wolfrock, our General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or electronic devices at this time. This session is for the Board and the CEO and General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and the community staff. But first up on our agenda, item one, our General Manager briefing and study session. Morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. We are super excited this morning because we have Nate Nearing and here with us to celebrate the microgrid, and I'm going to kick it immediately to Brenda and get us started. Good morning, Brenda.
She's waiting. Well, good morning, Commissioners. Brenda White, Local Government Relations. Really excited to be here this morning. So I hope you're excited to see, we're excited to reveal the modular microgrid educational project you see here. A project funded between Snohomish County and the PUD during the height of the pandemic. A Snohomish County Council member, Nate Nearing of the 1st Council District, was interested in helping fund a green energy project in North County. He was impressed with the PUD's Arlington microgrid. We met regularly over Teams at the microgrid site where the big ideas were formed. He wanted something relatable to all. A few of us took a road trip to Chelan PUD's Rocky Reach Dam, see some of the educational displays at the visitor center. More ideas, concepts imagined and designs refined. We pursued an educational project for our customers, students, and communities, on-site, remote, islanded, or plugged in. A website, Portal 2. Together, we came to have this mobile microgrid. Imagine. Buttons, lights, interactive learning. It took us a while, and over time, multiple team members, both internal, external, contributed to something to this final design. A microgrid that we envision will teach and educate customers and future generations about electric grids supported by batteries, greater awareness of the PUD and the utility of the future that is now. Please let me introduce Aaron Swaney as he recognizes the team and shares more about how we plan to use this wonderful asset.
Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. Aaron Swaney, Lead Communications Specialist. This was a tremendous project to work on. It took a tremendous team, a lot of people to come together and make it work. This is not what we usually build, right? We're usually building larger projects maybe, or the electrical grid. In fact, we built a larger project that is mirrored on this. So I just want to hand out some thank yous, obviously the county. We had big plans early on when we were talking about the microgrid. Jenny LaMarca, who was our education program coordinator, was in those early meetings. And there was a lot of plans for exhibits at the Clean Energy Center and a place for kids to come and learn about microgrid, learn about renewable energy, learn about battery storage. Budgets get cut. You know, the money goes into the actual building of the microgrid, things like that. But we're so thankful for the county for partnering with us and funding we think is going to be a great addition to the microgrid and be something kids for years are going to be able to come and check out and learn more about the microgrid and renewable energy. So just a few thank yous as we get going. So contract deals, never easy to work out. So thank you to Joanne Jones and Shana Rollins for all the hard work. Obviously Scott Gibson did a ton on the contract work as well. Design work, we worked with Lucy Creative on design. Wendy Paris and Kelsey Weeby were instrumental in keeping us kind of lockstep with Lucy on the design, making sure that our kind of colors were mirrored on that our design aesthetic was also mirrored as well. Scott Gibson and the emerging tech team, Jessica Spar, Alex Corey helped with technical knowledge in getting this built to the exact specs that the microgrid is too. Norma was our partner in fabrication, and Shelby Johnson from our facilities team was really great in helping kind of work with them to make sure that it was built to exactly what we wanted, and actually building out a, we wanted this to be modular. We wanted to be able to take it to schools, and Shelby was great in kind of building a cart that it can go on. So you can break this all the way down. It takes about two people, but you can break it down and you can move it, and it's pretty easy to move. Brenda White, of course, was instrumental in our connection to the county and helping be that voice in the room that kept us in check and kept us moving forward. That kept us always thinking about the customer at the end too. And then finally, of course, I wanted to talk about our program, or our education program coordinators, Jenny Lamarca and Heather Herbst, who really were thinking about the students when we were building this, making sure that STEM curriculum was thought, the language we used was something that they would understand. And this was one of the last projects that Jenny got to work on. You know, Jenny was somebody that was an amazing person in our department, and seeing her passion through this project, you know, she was showing up to meetings right up before she passed away. And so Wendy Paris has designed a really nice plaque that goes on the side that pays tribute to Jenny. Just a really, really nice thing. For the future, we're really excited to bring kids, students to the microgrid to show this off. We're excited to be able to, like I said, pack it up and take it to schools and help kids learn about not only microgrids, but as you'll see, it teaches about battery storage, V2X charging, a lot of different aspects of kind of the way that things are going in the future. With that, I'll hand it off to Scott Gibson, and he'll run you through some of the how it works.
All right, yeah, then we'll move it. Here, let me just say,
yeah,
just really quick, just a couple of things, and then we'll move it. Yeah, then we'll move. Hey, good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Yeah, Scott Gibson, Energy Storage and Emerging Tech, and I'm here with Jessica Spar from my team. And this was a really fun project. I think as we move towards the utility of the future, putting in more and more batteries and renewable energy, we have conversations with the public constantly. So we've got to figure out how to talk about this stuff simply so that they develop a trust in us and know that we're doing the right thing. And it's displays like this that kind of keep that conversation going. Like Commissioner Logan at the fair said the other day, he was out and a couple of kids and their mom were playing with the microgrid, and they were asking questions about how does this work? So it just gets everybody more comfortable with all the different things that we're doing to keep the lights on. So we're going to move the microgrid display to the front, and I'd love to have you come up and start pushing buttons and play with it. We talked about what it does. Yeah.
Before you do that, I want to thank my fellow commissioners for joining me in excitedly supporting this project from the very first moment, approving the contracts, approving every step of the way. We love anything that's educational, and this is so exciting. So thanks to my fellow commissioners.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we like to push buttons.
And so I just want to point out that microgrids are not without maintenance. They do require we came in this morning and the battery was dead. We were going to test it. So we grid connected it, charged up the battery, and now we're going to island the battery. We're going to disconnect from the grid, and it's going to seamlessly keep everything powered. So come on up and we'll move this up and we'll play with it. It takes a team of people to keep things going.
Is it going? Oh, it's
going. We're going to move it up right in front of you so you can see the front and back, and then have a great place for a picture. Yeah.
Commissioner Wolf will go first because she is our education guru. Come on.
Yeah. So, so maybe instead of me.
Stakes first.
Yeah, that's what the purpose was. Right.
So instead of talking and trying to explain what it does. It's kind of supposed to be standalone.
Doesn't matter where you start.
Yeah, you can just, if you want to just look at it and start pushing buttons and see if it makes sense. And this is
we will have like a teacher with it a lot of times, but I'll explain a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. But, yeah.
Thank you. Yes. I've seen Jenny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was.
And we will talk about it. But the idea is for this to kind of stand alone with our help answering questions. And this was our first time of doing it. So I hope we got it right. We got all the wording right. So go ahead and start.
Yes,
so what is a microgrid?
Microgrid.
Come on up if anybody wants to stand up and see it.
Push the button. Okay.
So,
so like the microgrid up in Arlington.
Everybody see?
Yeah, so when this button is pushed, what is a microgrid? It shows the clean energy center, little mock-up of that. Shows the battery that's connected to it. All the solar panels that make up the community solar project and the sun hitting the panels and sending energy to the building.
And there's a little description under it. It says it's a small collection of energy sources, wind turbines, solar panels, hydro, that transfer electricity to buildings on site or to the main electrical grid. So that's very, I could read, right?
Yeah.
So you want me to keep going?
Yeah, or let's.
Somebody else a turn.
Well, I'll let you.
I've pushed all the buttons before.
Here,
yeah.
No, you go ahead. How do microgrids transfer energy? Wow.
Yeah, so what this is showing is that microgrids can bring in energy from any different source, the sun, hydro, wind, anything that's creating electricity can bring it onto the system, store it in the battery, and transfer it to people's homes. Or, in our case, shows all the homes, but the most important is the clean energy center and the data center.
Terrific. We have a great visual. Yep. How do microgrids balance energy? Okay.
So what this one is, what if you don't have wind? What if the wind isn't blowing? Where do you get electricity from? So we get it from hydro and sun then, from solar. What happens if the sun isn't shining at night? Then you got wind and hydro.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And then if hydro hopefully never goes away, then we have wind and sun.
Right. Finally, what are the benefits? Microgrids keep critical buildings and infrastructure powered using renewable energy and battery storage in the event of an outage on the main electrical grid. We'll be talking about outage issues later today. So that's really. Thank you.
Yeah, in this case, it's kind of showing powering up a hospital, but for our microgrid and our data center and the local office. So,
Councilman Nairn, you'll notice the county's campus.
I see my office.
Very well done.
We spent an amazing amount of time. Wendy and Kelsey, Heather just spent an amazing amount of time making sure that graphic represented everything.
Yeah.
Everyone.
We want to talk about what's on the back.
Yeah. So that's kind of the front of it. Hopefully that just sparks conversation. It's pretty cool, isn't it? And then if you walk to the back. So we actually have a battery, a Goal Zero camping battery, but it is lithium ion. It powers up the whole system. You can plug it into the grid, plug it in your home and charge it up. But then when you unplug it from your house, then it powers everything here. And we do have, so we can sit out on the side of the fairgrounds and keep powered up. So there is a solar panel that'll charge up the battery. So it is. It is a little, yeah.
Wow.
So for all of you overlanders or campers, this is what you would have.
It's called
Goal Zero Yeti. Yeah. Pretty cool. So that powers it up.
It was dead this morning.
It was.
How'd you get it?
And we plugged it into the grid really quick.
Hydropower.
Charge it up.
Charge the hydropower.
Yep. But that happens. Yeah. I do that all the time with mine. You leave them on and they eventually drain down. So you got to always be charging them back up, maintain them. So on the back, we've got signage that says, where does PUD power come from? What is a battery? And then what does the future look like? And so on that one, it shows cars plugged into a home, so V to G, which we're experimenting with up at the microgrid. So that just sparks the conversation. Where does your power come from now? And where is it going to come from in the future?
Your turn.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I watched you. I don't you don't want me touching anything.
And then there is a final step that CorpCom is working on. Wendy's putting together this contract. We're having a website built that, let's see.
It's still plugged into the
web. Oh, it is. Okay. Well, I won't plug it in, but so CorpCom is creating a website that's going to go, and then we'll have a laptop attached to the back of this thing. It'll be on a little articulating arm that kids can fold out and then get onto the website, learn more about batteries and solar and wind, and that'll be attached securely to the back.
So, they'd be able to access it from school or home?
Yeah. It's going to just be basically just be a link on our website so you can access it from anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and start off kind of simple and just keep adding information to it as we.
Thank you for supporting it.
Thank you. This is awesome. Yeah. It's great to see.
It breaks down a really complex topic because I've tried to explain to people, but it breaks it down so it really comes home in terms of from their perspective. So if the Edmond School District wanted to have you come, would you be willing to travel and?
Absolutely.
All the way down to Edmonds?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the intent. We'll load it up. We'll fold it up. Yeah. It's on a really cool, it folds up into boxes, and then it goes onto a roller system, and you can roll it out to the car or truck, put it onto the truck, take it in, and set it up. Yeah.
So if you had I can envision that they would have a convocation, a meeting for the whole school to come, and then maybe or time for each class to come in and get out.
Sounds like you're going to be busy.
The whole school. I mean, there's so many schools.
And that's so important.
Start with elementary and go up to high school.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the intent of this. Talk about
even what high schoolers. I can tell you, they don't know this.
No. Most adults don't.
Right. Yeah.
It took me a long time to figure it out.
I think it's their opportunity. It's focused on children.
Hmm?
Again, my comments were adults.
Yeah.
Trying to explain the concept.
Exactly.
If there's ever any opportunity and request for it, I think they would also benefit.
City council meetings, you're going to go to city council meetings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. County council would be great.
The uses are endless, so we can take it anywhere.
Well, it's very clever. I will say when we first started talking about this, I had this version in my head of with running water, but I realized the challenges
to have running
trying
water.
To carry the running water.
Oh yeah,
have hydro thing right
there. Every city council and
department does that.
Yeah. Well, I was going to have fans. I mean, I was like visioning like a truck.
Sounds like you're an engineer.
Yeah. And I already had it's all up here. But this is better.
I think Nate said he has a couple of million that we can do a truck.
Oh, right.
Okay. Extra 2 million.
So just offer, Nick, do you want to share anything?
Oh, sure. Maybe just real briefly. Yeah. Well, just first of all, a huge thank you to the PUD. I can say, as a county council member, we interact with all sorts of different community organizations and government entities, and the PUD is second to none. Just great professionalism, awesome staff, the commissioners and the CEO, just very, very highly thought of and respected throughout the community. So thank you for all the work you do in general. I know when I first came into office in 2017, Brenda invited me to come out and visit the microgrid in Arlington shortly thereafter, 2017, 2018. And I was just so impressed. I thought it was so cool to learn about all this stuff. And I remember following up with Brenda immediately saying, how do I get involved in community solar and get a stake in this? And then over time, we talked about the need for more education projects, because when I explain Arlington's microgrid to people, it's very difficult, as we've talked about, to kind of put all this into a concise, clear explanation. So I think having this educational tool that we can use, not just for students, but for adults and others, is so awesome. And when I was thinking about this originally, I'm not quite as creative. And so this is my first time seeing the final product this morning, and I'm just thrilled with how it turned out. So a huge thank you to all the PUD staff who are involved, the commissioners for your support and helping to approve this, and the CEO and all the work that went into this. I think it's awesome and be very cool to use it to communicate about all the innovation and the clean energy future we have in Snohomish County. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your support and your leadership at the county to make this happen. Yeah, all right.
Cheers.
Thank you. Yeah. That's very nice of you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Where do you want us?
Let's gather around the
plate here.
I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah. I think you better be at least on the plate.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Come on up.
Yeah, John
here.
You come in, if that's all right with you. Right, John, why you come in the back here?
Makes
a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that's very nice of you.
Well, Nate, how about you come behind Commissioner Wolf here and Commissioner Olson right here in front of our
Yeah, you're fine. I'm fine. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I won't block anyone, I promise. I can see you all beautifully. There we go. All right, looking right here, y'all. Thank you. Got it. Any other combinations of groups we'd like?
I'd love to bring the team up.
The whole
team.
Fingers touch this project. We step go fill in between them however you can. If a few people can take a knee in the front, that'd be fun too.
Right, I'll just sit on.
Let's get a little closer to the display, everyone. Just don't be shy and.
In
the picture, though.
Can I get anyone else willing to maybe kneel on this side?
I'll do it.
Okay, nice.
Which knee are you on?
Yeah, I've got to be symmetrical.
Right here, and a few of you in the back, just come.
That's an objection.
Oh, we got a good. Look how awesome. Here. Wait.
Hey, get some
Commissioner Wolf, why don't you get a look at the and then everyone in the back just take one step forward. And Commissioner Olson, yeah, perfect. Right there next to Shelby. Those look great. Yeah, you lighting it up for us?
Yeah.
All right, everyone looking right here. Fantastic, thank you.
Move it out of the way. And then we'll just, you want to just move it off to the side?
Okay.
For us to just move it over here?
Yeah. Yeah, we almost need some wheels on. It would not be. Yeah, and I'll come and get it later.
Thank you.
Great. Next up is again Aaron Sweeney with a media update.
Back again, Aaron Sweeney, lead communications specialist. Some media update for everybody. All right, first up, wanted to talk a little bit about a story that showed up in the Times. They reached out to us about the Monroe property that we're thinking about purchasing. They wanted to know a little bit about the airfield that's out there and kind of I think the pilots had reached out to the reporter and kind of wanted to know. So they interviewed Mark Fleury. Mark did a great job really stressing the importance of why we're looking at that property, why it makes sense for us to build a larger complex in that region, why that property makes sense for us, how we've looked at dozens of other properties and they haven't really fit the mold. So good story, really focused on the future, really focused on the needs for the PUD. Interesting story in the Washington State Standard. Tom Bance reached out to me about energy storage and about our project and kind of
this story was really focused on kind of some of the struggles the utilities are having in placing these really, really large battery storage projects. And he wanted to know about our Arlington project. He didn't mention it a whole lot in the story, but I think that's probably because we've had quite a bit of success with our project. And it was really nice to be able to talk to him about the legwork that we've done with the city and how important that is for getting our story out and talking about why battery energy storage is so critical to our future energy needs. And working really early and often with the city was so important. A little bit of bunch of extra stuff. We had a little bit of coverage. A dump truck went down a large hill in Edmonds and took out one of our power poles and ran into a house. Of course, that generates quite a bit of interest with news. They were talking about mostly about the truck and things like that, but they also mentioned our crews replacing the power pole and the challenging situation we had. We had our IRP open houses in Linwood and Snohomish, got some coverage in some local publications about those. Had good turnout, especially at the Snohomish event. Really a good chance to talk to the community about the integrated resource plan and about how we're planning here. And then finally, Clearing Up did a story that mentioned us about the Markets Plus and about some of the concerns we have about this. I put this in here really to show that behind the scenes, there's a lot of work going on about this. Maybe just because we're mentioned by name, but you know, Ian Hunter, Garrison Marr, Adam Cornelius are doing a ton of work behind the scenes on this, so I wanted to include that. Publications, Current came out. I brought I brought an addition to share with everybody. I'm really, really, really proud of this. Everybody in Corp contributed to this. We really wanted to engage a younger audience a little bit, or you know, just have an addition of Current where people could actually kind of just like dig into it, color it. You know, there's a the five things that are different with this picture. I will say that my 11-year-old was looking at it this weekend, colored it, and was doing all the word search and all that other stuff. So it's a great opportunity to kind of engage that next generation, just right along with the microgrid exhibit, you know, talking to them about things that are really important.
You have extra copies.
We do, yeah.
So we've got more kids than one.
Yes, we've got hundreds. So if you need some, I can get some for you.
My particular line, page 7. Which is word search. I do that all the time.
Yeah, and that was Wendy's idea. You know, I think it was one of those things where thinking about a creative way to talk about emergency kit. You know, we're going into storm season, so it's kind of fun to do it in a way that maybe sticks and you know talks about some of the things that you would put in an emergency kit.
Well, I really appreciate the teachers and employees and observers. We've done that a few times, and I think it really makes the organization seem relatable.
Yeah.
So I think that's really a sound strategy.
Yeah, I feel like a broken record. Our people are amazing. So just being able to put them in here and show them off. And, you know, we did this one. The thought was, you know, who's behind the scenes during these storms that are doing a ton of the work that maybe aren't out in the community? So, you know, talking about energy control center, warehouse, and transportation, and shining a light on all the work that they do.
And this is internally out. We don't contract this.
No, we do contract that out. Yeah, Consolidated Press does this for us. They've done it for years. They do a really, really good job. And we have a contest going on right now. If you have to find Zap's hard hat, and we already have over 1,000 people that have entered the contest. And this has only been out, what, 3 or 4 days? So very exciting.
I wanted to thank you for putting a little bit in the employees' district daily about the fact that the Edmonds Methodist Church has flipped the switch and they are producing all of their power now by solar.
Yeah.
And I know that the employees who read the daily update know that, but maybe the public doesn't.
So. Yeah.
But it's been in the Beacon, the Edmonds Beacon.
Yeah, I think that's the story that we put in district daily.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for including that. Yeah. It's a big deal for us, you know. Yeah. It had the whole church, you know, relying.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Public Power Magazine, I worked with Peter Denhauer and Ahmad Barakwai, and we did a story combining kind of a look back at where time-varying rates have been, and then kind of a case study on what we did with Flex Energy. That turned out really nice. Peter did a really good job. And APPA was great to publish it.
And then NWPPA Bulletin, Kelly Stickney wrote a really nice article about AI and why it's really critical utilities embrace this technology. You know, it's not going away. It's something we have to look into and figure out how we're going to use in the future. So I thought it was a really good article about kind of here at the district, how we are working really diligently and carefully to kind of explore this new technology, not just diving in, but looking at it from a holistic point of view. And then finally, wanted to showcase Krista Rasmussen's photo. She got best photo at the NIC conference a couple weeks ago for this photo from last year's Run for Warmth. Just a great photo and great recognition for Krista, who does amazing work. That is it from me.
Questions or comments?
No, thank you. I couldn't help but think about how Portland, I read an article, Portland is being overrun by squirrels. And not to be the Debbie Downer or party pooper, but I voted for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there've been a few media calls I've gotten where I've had to say, yes, it was a squirrel. It was the cause of that outage. And they get a good chuckle out of sipping that.
Well, they don't know what to do in Portland, Oregon. They've got so many squirrels invading neighborhoods. Yeah, but we love zip and zap, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any comments?
No. Great coverage.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I think having Mark, having you, you were very relatable in that article, and I think that really helped diffuse some of the energy around that. The battery farm is fascinating as you watch. You know, we're starting a project where I think that community is proud that we're going to build a battery there, and you can see not far away from us, people are up in arms that the batteries. Project may be coming to their area. So I think it's all about relationships, our government affairs people, everyone else getting, John meeting with cities and things like that. I think it makes a big difference. I was thinking about this AI article, and I was wondering if commissioners, if you'd be interested at some point to have sort of an update from staff when it's appropriate on what we're looking at, just because there's so much concern people have about AI. I saw some things at AI, APPA last year, and it was pretty fascinating, some real possibilities. And it'd be good to have us get some education. Are you guys interested?
I agree with that. Not only, but I would add to the internal work on it, but from a customer's perspective, speak to that as well.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, absolutely. We can do that. But let me make sure, though, Commissioner Olson, when you say from a customer perspective, all right.
Customers have concerns about a lot of things. And I know that we are, dipping our toes into this, but work is obviously being done. And I'd like to hear the benefit to the customer by the free work that we're doing. Is that?
Yep, makes sense.
It's from the customer's hesitation.
Yeah, no, perfect. Yeah, we'll get that on the agenda. Great question.
Thank you.
Awesome, thank you, Aaron. All right, next up is the 2024 Wildfire Mitigation Plan update. Mark Flurry.
Morning, John. Thanks for having us here today. I'm accompanied by David Popich in the back row, or in the front row now. And David's a protection engineer in the Planning and Protection Department. You probably remember him from a few months ago when he provided the reliability report out there. I'm excited that David being here today and having an opportunity to highlight all the work he's put into to this wildfire mitigation plan up in the last few months. We also have Angela Johnson in the room, and her team has been critical on this as well. So it's great to have her here today. I'm Mark Flurry, Senior Manager of T&D System Operations and Engineering. And really our purpose today is twofold. We want to provide an update to the commission on the wildfire mitigation plan As you might recall, that document's been in existence since 2021. But what's new is DNR has come up with a template that they're requiring that utilities in the state of Washington be in compliance with, perform with. And then also, we're proposing to bring back a resolution at the October 22nd meeting for your consideration that would have the commission adopt the plan. So I'll pause there to see if you have any questions for me, and I'm going to hand it off to David, and he's going to take us through the bulk of the
meeting. I've had it on my screen, but you were talking about it in the presentation. It talked about the coordination with DNR and four different organizations. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering about the importance of coordinating also with the U.S. Forest Service, because some of their lands are but ours. And if there's a huge forest fire, it could spread. So,
yeah, no, that's a great point. You're spot on. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has lands adjacent to the Jackson Project. So coordination with them would be just as important as
the Forest Service. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Forest Service. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would bring them in.
Absolutely.
I have a question. Mitigation plan that will be brought to the board, does that have a cycle to it, like every 5 years or every 3 years?
Great question. We'll touch on that in the presentation, but we're required by the RCW to update that document every 3 years. But we'll have a process whereby we're regularly meeting through the summers, and it's really a living document. So we'll be as we navigate this new landscape for utility. All right, well, David, I'll hand it over to you.
Hello.
Good morning.
Feel free to stop me at any point. I'm going to start with some definitions. A lot of different acronyms that will be used throughout this. So start with Ignition Potential Index, IPI. Is a proprietary raster developed by a consultant that the district hired in 2021 to develop our initial wildfire mitigation plan. The consultant that we hired specializes in wildfire threat assessment and modeling. The IPI raster is used to prioritize the locations most capable of igniting a fire and producing fires resistant to initial suppression efforts due to a higher heat per unit area. The RCW, or the Revised Code of Washington, is a compilation of all permanent laws now in force in Washington. IFPL is the Industrial Fire Precaution Level, which is an activity closure system developed by DNR, Department of Natural Resources, to reduce wildfire risks. This is activated during fire season in DNR territory, and it requires fire watch, which is an individual who stays an hour after work is completed. And it limits equipment and certain activities between 8 p.m. and 1 p.m. or entirely, depending on what level we're at. Public Safety Power Shutoff, or a PSPS, is a planned power outage used to prevent wildfires during severe weather conditions. Any questions on the definitions?
Yeah, I have to go back. How is the IPI different from the alerts that we get when we're driving along and the Forest Service says fire risk today, mm-hmm. High or low or whatever. Yep. Is that related?
It is not related, no.
It's not related?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. The plan itself goes into much more detail on what IPI is. I think what you're going towards is more red flag warnings. And as I mentioned, the IFPL, but IPI would be completely separate. So while the district was proactive and already had a wildfire mitigation plan in place, House Bill 1032 was passed in July of 2023, which prompted the district to revisit the plan. From House Bill 1032 and RCW 19.29A.170, by October 31st of this year, and every 3 years thereafter, each consumer-owned utility must review and, if appropriate, revise, such as we did, and adopt this wildfire mitigation plan. The governing board of each consumer-owned utility shall review the plan and we must provide a copy to the Department of Natural Resources, allow local fire protection districts to provide input, and we must submit it to the Utility Wildland Fire Prevention Advisory Committee, created in RCW 76.04780. The House bill also directed DNR, among other independent expert consultants, to develop the wildfire mitigation plan format and a list of elements that's required by each consumer-owned utility to both follow and use that format. Major step in our plan was to identify roles and responsibilities. As the district became aware of House Bill 1032, a team of leads was identified to provide leadership support and, very importantly, future accountability of the plan. This team covers risk management and compliance, emergency management, transmission and distribution engineering and system operations, customer communication and education, and our field operations. Wildfire risk team was already in place for multiple years now, which that team focuses on seasonal wildfire preparedness and response, ensuring that all necessary measures are in place during the summer months. Every year, starting in May, the wildfire risk team begins meeting where we start to monitor the IFPL level that I mentioned previously. So they start to meet regularly to decide when we will go into fire settings. Fire settings sounds fancy, but it's just disabling and reclosing. After that is enabled, the team continues to meet and they monitor current weather conditions and forecasted weather conditions and document those. And if anything additional needs to be addressed, the team is constantly meeting. Typically in September is when we monitor to return from fire settings and close the year's wildfire season. This team also has a large role in the potential event of a PSPS. So as mentioned previously, the legislature directed DNR, along with the other experts and consultants that they hired, to develop the plan format and the required elements to be included in the plan. So this includes a vegetation management program, an infrastructure inspection and maintenance program, modifications or upgrades to facilities, and constructions of new facilities, which must incorporate effective measures to minimize fire risk, operational procedures to minimize fire risk, preventative programs, including adoption of new technology hardened utility infrastructure, identification of appropriate risks of vegetation management and rights of way, and allow the public and interested parties to engage with the plan and communicate the plan to customers and other entities addressing wildfire risk and safety. It's also important to note that the wildfire mitigation format provided by DNR isn't just limited to these required elements. Plan format includes additional elements that may or may not be relevant to utilities, but they must be considered. We're going to focus mainly on these required elements and among a few others, but in the plan, there are quite a few more things to consider. So meeting the required element of a vegetation management program, the district does an annual spot trim of our high IPI circuits. For all our other circuits, we're on a 7-year cycle. We also do tree trimming inspections, high risk vegetation removal, and hazard tree removal. Regarding the infrastructure inspection and maintenance program, this district's system is on a 10-year inspection cycle. This includes evaluating pole health, inspecting all attached material to the pole and insulators. We also do recloser and regulator and capacitor bank inspections by a process called trap runs. This equipment, as you know, is very important to our system. We do inspections of steel and ductile iron poles, and similar to the vegetation management program, we inspect our high IPI circuits annually.
Question on this page, the 10-year cycle. It's my understanding that when we're out the field, we see something, it's going to get fixed.
Yes.
You don't wait for 10 years.
Yes, okay. Definitely. We have a very large system, and so
yeah.
10 years is just really it focuses on the pole.
I understand that part, but I just want to make sure we were all filming.
Yeah. Regarding the requirements for modifications or upgrades to facilities and construction of new facilities, bushing guards, insulated covers, and insulated jumper wire is used for new equipment installs to prevent contact with foreign objects. New installs also include increased arm lengths, which results in more spacing between conductors. Conductor spaces are also used when needed to provide additional space between the wire. Reclosers come with capability now of fire settings and hotline hold settings. And in the future, smart grid devices will be installed to provide more visibility and control of the system.
What is a hotline hold setting?
A hotline hold setting is used for the safety of our employees when they're working on the line and it's energized. What it does is an instantaneous trip. So if there was a fault, possibly during working on the line, it trips instantaneously versus normally it actually would take, you know, depending on how much fault current there is, it will take some time.
And also it doesn't reclose.
Does not also disable it.
A retreated line,
yeah,
it will relay once, cut out, and then come back on, get that tree cleared. It'll go through that, what, three or four times?
We do one reclose.
One reclose.
Yeah.
This takes that out of play. So there is no reclose.
For workforce training, tree trimming follows fire watch and restrictions per the IFPL levels that I mentioned. And with our upcoming wildfire mitigation annual training program, all other field staff will also be trained on this. Additionally, we'll do a safety sponsored training each spring before fire season for field employees. DNR also requires now that all wildland fires are to be reported. So field staff and operators will report ignition events that meet the criteria, and we will document those. Field staff continues to conduct tailgate meetings to discuss risk and emphasize safety. We'll continue our public safety power shutoff exercises to improve the plan and better prepare ourselves. We had a great event here in July put on by Hunter Burchard and Scott Parker, where we basically simulated a scenario where a PSPS procedure needed to be put into action. This served just as an opportunity to test our plan and also identify the gaps and improvements needed. So we will continue doing those tabletop exercises. We actually have one coming up next year where we'll go through another scenario. In the future, we've also discussed doing a surprise one where no one's prepared for it. So we'll continue improving that PSPS plan. Regarding the requirement for identification of appropriate risks for vegetation management and rights of way, the district is in compliance with National Electric Safety Code, RCW, and the American National Standards Institute, other known as ANSI. So now I'll pass it back to Mark.
One of the key required elements, that last bullet point you probably saw on David's slide, was community outreach and public awareness. And our corporate communications department and our emergency management department have been doing a phenomenal job of that. These four bullets illustrate the work they've done in the last few months. We've got an outward-facing webpage dedicated to wildfire safety and also PSPS awareness, or public safety power shutoff awareness. PSPS was mentioned in the wire. I think it was... Which wire was it?
August
wire, yeah. And then we're also encouraging customers to register for wildfire alerts. And finally, corporate communications and our emergency management department are coordinating with Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management, Human Services, Department of Health as well. Couple notes on the public safety power shutoff. That was done in July in concert with Department of Emergency Management and the Fire Marshal's Office from Snohomish County. And then both Hunter and Scott Parker have scheduled later this month on the 29th, a short primer to get other folks who are interested at local emergency management agencies to understand what the implications of a PSPS are. And then the first week of November, we've got a seminar scheduled that we're holding collaboration with Snohomish County DEM. So lots of activities underway, trying to get the word out to get folks to understand that this is a risk that's out there. This slide highlights some of the work that Scott Parker and Hunter have been doing. So during an incident response, there's ongoing coordination between our emergency management department and with Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management And Commissioner Wolf, I appreciate your comments earlier. We'll be sure that we're coordinating with the appropriate federal agencies as well. I'll pass that word on to both Scott and Hunter. The state level coordination is listed there as the second bullet point. On our community wildfire protection plan, our emergency department, emergency management department collaborates with Snohomish County DEM on the wildfire protection plan, and those upcoming PSPS activities are illustrate that coordination. Finally, a wildfire watch dashboard is developed in concert with Snohomish County DEM, and that's going to provide all employees with real-time safety information related to wildfires. I just wanted to touch on the public safety power shutoff because it is a new procedure that's been introduced into the wildfire mitigation plan. It's an operational procedure. It is a tool of last resort. Ever exercised a PSPS to date, and we take it very seriously. The factors that we would consider and do consider and monitor throughout the summer, that wildfire risk team that meets and looks at field conditions weekly, are whether or not we've got a red flag warning issued in the area and where that is and at what elevation. And we also look at low humidity levels and whether or not we're having forecasted sustained winds or even gusts. We also look at site-specific conditions such as the IFPL and our high IPI circuits, most locations. And we use field personnel in the procedure to conduct on-the-ground real-time observations. So we'll send servicemen out to those areas if we have a red flag warning, and we'll have them observe. We also are not alone in this. We've got neighboring utilities that are considering PSPS. This has been slowly moving north from California in the last few years. And lastly, identifying urgent hazards in the field. And part of the mitigation for that are the annual exercises that David alluded to, which are going out and trimming around our high IPI circuits early in the year in the May timeframe, and then also conducting inspections of the infrastructure in those areas. Plan is required to be audited every 3 years. We've in the past used a consultant, an expert in the field, and we'll continue to consider that review and feedback from the consultant. This is a new area for us, and we want to make sure we're staying on the forefront of all the best practices. David mentioned that wildfire risk team meets weekly from May through October. They're evaluating conditions and making recommendations on settings, operations, and then also ultimately as to whether or not we would hold a PSPS. We're encouraging feedback from the line department because these are new practices for them as well. We'll be conducting, as David mentioned, in the spring, a training to get folks reoriented around wildfire risks and get their minds set on the risks and the hazards that are present in the summertime and not necessarily in the wintertime. And lastly, David touched on the PSPS tabletop exercise. We'll likely make that an annual exercise on top of the other education that we're doing right now. Questions?
I do have, I'm very interested in this topic, have been for years, and was raising questions about it even like in 2019. And so I'm happy that you've made so much progress. I believe I read in one of the articles that was attached to our district daily update that Avista has already gone through at least a day of this preventative shutoff. What do you call it?
The public safety power shutoff.
Right, that one. Okay.
PSPS.
I don't know if you've been talking to their people and talking about how it went for them, but you've gone through, I think it was for one day.
Yeah, and Bonneville has not necessarily on any transmission that's impacted us, but they've also, conducted PSPS.
So people are getting to be really aware. Is there a possibility, or I would like to read the plan. So I didn't see it in our documents. Maybe I missed it.
We'll be sure that a copy.
I would really, really love to read that.
Yeah.
And the people who do the tree trimming, what do you call them?
Vegetation management.
Veg management. Yeah. The people who do that, often they are companies that we contract with, and I hope that they are very aware of the value of the mature and old growth trees. And I don't think there would be any in our right-of-way anyway. But it's really important to protect the mature and old growth trees because they're very fire resistant and they don't burn easily, and they really help protect our forests. So that's just kind of a plea, I guess, that we make sure that whomever we hire, that they are respectful of the mature and old growth trees. And recently there has been an executive order passed at the federal level by the president to protect the mature and old growth trees nationwide. So, I mean, I'm sure our people are aware that the environmental department here needs to kind of be on top of that.
Sure, they're on top of it.
Okay.
Well, we're fortunate to have Aaron Janisco with us here today, so I'm sure he's taking notes in the back. And
okay, and that was it. I just had Janisco off the plan and mature and old growth trees.
Appreciate it. Great comments.
Thank you very much.
Communication countywide. We interface with
Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management.
Emergency Management. Therefore, how does that communication spread to municipalities, and is that their responsibility?
They have a communication system utilizing text messages and like Teams channels whereby they're communicating amongst the entire county and all the municipalities, yes. Scott Parker and Hunter do a phenomenal job of that. And during, whether it's a wind event or a snow event, they're communicating constantly, both laterally and up with the state agencies.
So I have a question, and I'm not sure who it's for, but I work in a school district. They have, we call it the standard care for taking care of other people, children. Is there a standard of care for wildfire prevention emerging in the nation? I understand we have an RSPW, and where is that in being able to be used if despite our best efforts we do start a fire in court? I'm curious where we are, where fire prevention is.
I'm Willem Brock, General Counsel. Great question. So in Washington, it's a negligence standard. So you have a duty, and then you have to prove that there was a breach of that duty. Typically, you start with what's called an ordinary standard of care, what a reasonably prudent person would do under the same or similar circumstances. Because of what we do is inherently dangerous, in Washington state, it is considered the utmost standard of care, that we have industry professionals, that we are supposed to inspect our lines, we are supposed to construct our system, make sure we are ensuring the safety, public health and safety of our customers and any passersby. So that is the standard. It's somewhat amorphous in a way because you have to prove based on facts and circumstances that you did what you should have done based under those circumstances, and that's changing. So you have new technologies, covered conductors, fire resilient poles, you've got remote weather stations, we've got all kinds of things that are evolving. Those will all be facts and circumstances determinations if we were to start a fire as to whether we exercise that utmost highest level of care. We see it often when you meet with our excess insurance carriers. They're now bringing all that national data to bear when they come do an insurance audit, and they say, well, are you deploying these things or are you not? Do you have a mitigation plan? Is really the foundation of the entire standard of what's reasonable. And the state is trying to give guidelines, because utilities have been asking for over a decade now to say, what are we supposed to do? Is it 7-year vegetation cycle? Is it 10-year vegetation cycle? Are we supposed to do this? Are we not supposed to do this? This is a great foundation, great starting point where we have a common playbook we can all work from, get these in, and I think they'll evolve over time as the new technologies come. Even our Snow Smart project is going to help with that. And so we are kind of leading edge in a lot of ways. We're working with a number of different groups to kind of compare notes. I know Mark and his team do a great job exploring the new technologies and how we construct and manage our system.
Thank you. You're plugged into it. Any follow-up questions?
Isn't there someone in our PUD who's on the state fire board or whatever they call that? You are. Thank you for doing it. Oh, that's why you're so knowledgeable. I mean, that's one reason.
It's the gift that keeps on
giving.
There's a lot of activity right now, not only nationally, but locally, particularly in the state of Washington. Investor-owned utilities, consumer-owned utilities are all working together to understand that standard of care. You know, certainly different in California, the way that they've taken more of a punitive approach that's having an impact on consumers with inverse condemnation. Washington is a negligent state, which, you know, comes with its own challenges, but we're all trying to work on making sure it's the right fit, ultimately knowing that it is our responsibility to protect our ratepayers, and we don't want fires to start. And we don't want to have to pass on those catastrophic costs of fire suppression onto our ratepayers. So we all have to work together to figure out how we can tackle this challenge.
One of the challenges is that fire is a natural thing, and it historically has been actually necessary in some places to keep the ecology healthy. Certain plants won't grow without fire and so forth. And then on the far east side of our county, do we abut the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest? Because that is a forest that has a lot of dying trees. The Okanagan-Wenatchee, I don't remember. On the far east side, like Chelan?
Yeah, when you're driving up.
Yes. Anyway, just that fire can spread quickly. The wind usually goes from west to east, but you never know.
Yeah.
And they can create their own weather patterns if they're big fires.
We certainly saw that with the Bull Creek fire.
Yes.
That's typically where you see it, in that kind of, you know, urban-rural interface where folks are moving closer and closer to those fire-prone areas. I did talk to Avista. It was roughly a 2 to 3 hour duration, their PSPS. It was one of their remote circuits. It worked well, except for it was a Sunday afternoon. So, you know, certainly customers aren't going to be happy about a Sunday afternoon where we're out of power for 4 hours. But communicating that, Avista's gotten a lot better. They've kind of blazed a trail. We're preparing notes on how we can better communicate and give that advance warning.
That's great.
Thank you all. And I just a quick follow-up, if I may, to Commissioner Wolf's comment there. As David mentioned in his portion of the presentation, the RCW does require that the governing body review the documents. So I'll work with Alice to make sure we get a copy for you.
They'll be in the
next
packet.
We have to approve it.
Yes.
Sounds like you'll be in the packet next.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great job, Mark and Dave.
John, let's take a short break and come back at 10 after. All right, it is 10:10 and we are back.
All right, next up is
Commissioner Wolf. Let's go ahead.
Go ahead. Connect Up quarterly update. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Commissioners. Tim F., AMI Program Director. I'm here to give a quarterly update for the board. Right. So the purpose of the presentation is just informational, keeping the board abreast of what is happening on the program as we move forward. So we'll cover overall program status, meter deployment status, the network, how daily operations and billing is going, and then I've got some wins for us to talk about, which is actually going to be about our progress on 2.0. And I'll take some time for questions if you have them. So currently, from a budget perspective, we are running very close to target for the overall program. So projecting out where we're at, I expect us to finish right now pretty close. However, let's talk about meter supply, and I'm actually going to jump down to, let's not, put a tie on because it's not great news. Our meter manufacturer, Sensus, now Xylem, reached out to us recently with news about a meter manufacturing defect. So they are starting to see this defect show up in some other utilities. Fortunately, it's not manifesting as a high count yet, but I think the jury's still out in terms of the impact that is going to have on us. We are working closely with them On that, we're also reaching out to other customers to get updates and find out how this may or may not be impacting them. That has, this is very late breaking. So this is news that's come in since I actually turned in the slide deck. So we just heard Friday that meter supply is going to be pretty substantially impacted for the fourth quarter. I apologize to the ELT members in the room. This is very late news. The good news is the district has been putting mitigation steps in place for risks such as this. And so we do have a meter supply stored up for just such a case. We did anticipate the potential for there being interruptions in supply or kind of a lumpy supply chain, if you will, given what happened with, manufacturing supply chains during COVID. So we put some of these plans in place that will keep our meter installers busy without any impact during fourth quarter. However, it does raise the longer term, mitigation and risk mitigation questions. And so I'll be working very closely with my team and with our consultants to discuss further opportunities to mitigate risks that could spill into the future.
What's the nature of the defect?
Sure. It's called flux contamination. So on the circuit board of the meter itself, flux is used in the process of the soldering. And so some of that flux leaked out further than it should have. And so that can cause a variety of issues, short circuits, which manifest in a variety of ways. So displays stop working, meters stop working. It really can be quite random in how it actually manifests. So that's part of what we're reaching out to other customers, to our meter vendor, to find out what should we be looking for. It is possible that we've experienced, we do have occasional meter failures, and those are covered by warranty. And so we get replacements free of charge, but we do want to make sure that we're keeping a very close eye on any trends, upward trends in how that flux contamination may be manifesting.
But it doesn't represent a danger to our...
To the best of our knowledge right now, we don't believe it does. We're still monitoring that very closely. And again, that is part of our investigation, working very closely with, again, with our consultants and other experts to ensure that that's not ever comes up.
Have there been reported fires?
There have been no reported fires that I'm aware of. So let's go back to good news. We're now actually at over 33,000 electric meters. I checked the numbers this morning, so that's about 9% of our total. Our rate's been picking up. We have been deploying in East County. We were in a less dense area. We're starting to make our way back into Monroe, so we'll start to see our rate of installs pick up as we have less drive time between residences. Water is going very well. They have over 9,000 of the total 23,000-ish meters going. So we're now hovering close to 40% of our total installed there. So things are going well. They're fully staffed and rocking and rolling on the water side. On our business as usual, we are, any chance we have been getting to, increase our opportunities to swap meters, we've been looking for that. So right now, if a customer calls and say they're doing some panel work and they need to have their power disconnected while that panel work is happening, great, you're already disconnected. We're just going to go ahead and swap your meter. So that's something new that we incorporated since I was last before the board. Community outreach, we're going to be reaching out to Monroe since we're working our way back that direction, and look for an opportunity to perhaps touch base with the city of Monroe and get them up to speed on what's going on in their area. And then communications, we do have something, we have three communications that we send out to our customers. We send a letter out about 3 months in advance. We send a postcard about 2 weeks in advance, and we send out an email within the couple of days of customers getting their notice or getting their new meter. The two-week postcard is actually creating quite a planning challenge for our deployment team and trying to get that timed well. It's actually tying our hands quite a bit. And so we've been reaching out and trying to determine if we stop that two-week postcard, what impact would that have? Corporate Communications has dug in and has some survey data that they've been helping us with and found that customer recall on that postcard is actually not that good. So it's not having kind of the messaging impact, positive impact that we hoped. We've talked to others, other utilities are not doing that 2-week postcard. And so we're discussing the possibility of doing a pilot where we actually stop sending out that postcard to see if it would have any negative impact in terms of communication with our customers. If it turns out that after doing some survey work afterwards, if it's really no impact, we'll probably drop that 2-week postcard. I'll keep you posted on how that goes. Any questions about that before? AMI network deployment is pretty status quo. You know, from the overall perspective, we are still chipping away at the last 6 or so network sites. These tend to be more peripheral around the district, not impacting the areas where we're deploying meters. But some of these are the trickier, more complicated permitting processes to get through. But I have no concerns that we won't be able to finish those in a timely fashion. And then ongoing network, just making sure that we're getting our ability to communicate with all meters out there. And so as we're going, we do have issues with some challenging meter rooms that are in basically a concrete bunker under apartment buildings. These can be really tough. So that's just part of the challenge of the project that the team is working through and working with our vendor to make sure that we're able to talk to every single meter out there. Daily AMI operations and billing, I reached out to our customer accounting team to find out, okay, guys, how's it going? You know, and they're like, it is going really well. It's very challenging, but they wanted the board to know that they are really excited about the new AMI meters and how great the data quality is coming back from the field. But the team is working in two worlds, our legacy world and the new world. And so it's an added workload, but they did want to convey that things are going very well and they're very happy with how their team is receiving this new work. Network performance is going solid. We're meeting all of our targets, 99.5% of all meters reporting within a day. So still very something that we monitor every day just to make sure that the system is healthy and working the way it's supposed to. And then since the last time I was here, we did complete an upgrade of our meter data management system. So that's the data that holds all of the meter data as it comes back in and that we use when we go to bill. Finally, I did want to update you on some other progress. So it's not all about deployment. It's also about pushing the further use and the benefits that we can get from the system. So since I was last here, we have completed our reverse energy identification. So what that is making sure that if customers are putting energy back onto the grid, that we already know about it, that it's all, say it's a solar on homes, we are finding customers that we did not know had solar. And so those chances are those haven't been inspected. We don't know if they're safe. And so this is already alerting us to a handful of customers that we were able to reach out to. Some of them have temporarily shut off or disconnected their solar until we can make sure that state has inspected that it's safe to operate.
So that's something that potentially could hurt injured line crews.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So very important that we make sure our customers have those installed properly.
Another advantage of the meter.
Yeah, it is. We also now have completed our weekly overload report for transformers. So this is how we can also tell if, you know, customers, we have a number of EVs or extra load that's been installed behind a meter that's starting to stress out some of our transformers. Our designers, our local office engineers are reaching out now and even asking, hey, I'm doing a job here. Are there many AMI meters behind that transformer? Do I need... So they can upsize the transformer if they need to, if they have other work going on. So this is another great thing going on. data analytics we're working on building up so that our engineers and others can have more tools to kind of serve themselves, go look at information. Diversion detection, so we have a report specification that is in process, and that's to help us find out if we have some customers tampering with their electric service. We are supporting time of day research or time of day planning, as well as prepay research for the potential of doing those down the road. And then we're also working with our system planning department to incorporate AMI data into their planning tools. And that is also going well. In fact, I understand they've had to dial back the resolution of data because it's so much that their planning tools, it would overload the planning tools. So we're getting it back to a useful level for them. And then finally, we're also diving into our AMI for substation meters. So we'll be replacing meters within the substation with also the same technology that we're using out on the field for all the residential meters. Sure, so that's my presentation. That's the update for this quarter. Questions?
Just an observation, but I think that transformer overload report is cool and fascinating. I just think I see it in my neighborhood, not a high electrification neighborhood, electric cars, heat pumps. I can just imagine that those are happening all over the place.
Yeah, this gives us, I mean, we have some other indicators which help us know where that's happening, but this is one more to understand how much it's stressing, stressing our grid.
Great. The meter, the new meter effect, is it in both water and?
It is not. It is only on the electric, so meter's in good shape.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Excellent job. That is it for presentations this morning.
Okay, it is now 10:24 a.m. and the board will recess into executive session to discuss current or potential litigation under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act. It is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes and conclude at 10:54 a.m. Our regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30.